Welcome to a special live episode of Whiskey Cast, a cask strength conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I am Mark Gillespie, and you're listening, if you're on the web, to episode number 299 for January 21st, 2011. We are live today with an audience at the Hotel Grand Pacific at the Victoria Whiskey Festival in British Columbia. And yeah, give yourselves a hand for showing up for this. We have to prove we have people in the room. And this is the first time we have ever done this, a live show on the web. So no matter where you are around the world, thank you for joining us today. And if you come in late or if you wind up missing any part of this, you'll be able to listen to the entire show live on the podcast feed later on tonight at whiskeycast.com. In just a few minutes, we're going to have a live blind whiskey tasting with the panel of tasters sitting here to my right. But we do have housekeeping details to take care of first. The usual news of the week, it is brought to you this time around, as always, by Glenn Maringy. And if you have editorial comments, folks here in the room, feel free to boo, hiss, clap, whatever. There will be points later at which you may want to do just that. And let's leave the doors open so that people can come in, because there are people who are coming out of the master classes and just walking by the room, so we're trying to drag as many people as we can in here. As I first reported last week, thanks to an Australian newspaper who broke the news, Shackleton's Whiskey is back in Scotland at home. An Australian newspaper reported last weekend that White & Mackay owner Vijay Mallya had left New Zealand on his private jet, must be nice, with three bottles of McKinley's blended Scotch whiskey that was recovered from Sir Ernest Shackleton's base camp in Antarctica. White & Mackay did confirm this report on Monday. It turns out the Antarctic Heritage Trust was not going to allow, no way, no how, those bottles to be shipped back to Scotland via FedEx, Purolator, UPS, or whatever. And there was no way they were going to let those bottles go in checked baggage in the bottom of a jet for really good reasons. So it turns out Vijay Mallya took his private jet along with Richard Patterson down to Christchurch, New Zealand, picked up three bottles, brought them back in the actual luxury seating on Vijay's private jet. And Richard Patterson now has those bottles at his blending lab in Glasgow for testing. Once he's done, the bottles are going to be returned to New Zealand and then eventually put back in the base camp at the hut in Antarctica. And needless to say, Richard has been pretty busy and was not available for interviews this week, but we'll be talking to him about what he found with those whiskeys on an upcoming episode. In the meantime, White & Mackay's The Dalmore brand is also expanding its series of bottlings aimed at helping preserve rivers in Scotland. Last year's D-Dram bottling helped preserve fish habitat along the River Dee, and three more rivers are about to get the same treatment. The Rivers collection from the Dalmore will include the D-Dram along with the Spey Dram for the River Spey, the Tay Dram for the River Tay, and the Tweed Dram for the River Tweed. The bottlings will likely, and you can feel free to boo here, folks, because we know they'll be listening back in Scotland, only available in Scotland.
Boo!
And through other online retailers. So you might be able to get those bottles online. We do want to encourage folks to try to send their bottles to North America whenever possible. Right, folks?
Yes!
Sticking with a maritime note, Old Pulteney is releasing the second in its travel retail series of bottlings honoring some of the legendary fishing boats from its hometown of Wick. The WK-209 honors a herring drifter that was also known as the Good Hope that was built back in Wick in 1948. The WK-209 was matured in European sherry oak casks, just 9,600 bottles available through travel retail outlets only, folks. But if you're traveling, you may be able to score a bottle or two. Most of the UK could soon be under what amounts to a minimum pricing scheme for whiskey. While the proposal won't set prices in England and Wales, it would ban selling whiskey for less than the taxes on a bottle. That amounts to around £8 for a 70cl bottle. The Scotch Whiskey Association is welcoming the move since it would put spirits on the same level as beer and wine. The SWA is encouraging a similar scheme in Scotland. And finally, the SWA is also crying foul over a new whiskey being sold by a company based in Panama. You here in the audience may have heard about this during the week. Scottish Spirits has an office in Glasgow as well. Its label bears all of the flair usually associated with Scotch whiskey. The Scottish Spirits whiskey is being test marketed in the Caribbean and South America. Now, it doesn't actually say Scotch whiskey on it, but it's the labeling that has the SWA threatening legal action because it looks an awful lot like what you'd expect to see from Scotch whiskey. There is another thing, though, that will have purists, especially everybody in this room, up in arms. This whiskey does not come in a bottle, folks. It comes in a can. A 12-ounce can of whiskey. The strength is not indicated in the pictures I've seen, but 12 ounces of whiskey would probably knock anyone in this room on their butt. I know it would knock me on my butt. You're not going to drink this 12-ounce can, essentially almost this full water bottle of whiskey, in one sitting. If you do, you are seriously nuts, folks. Scottish Spirits also got in trouble with the SWA last autumn for advertising whiskeys claimed to be from Scotland, but actually not. And that is the news brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Let's look at the emails of the week now, brought to you by the Singleton of Glendolen. I heard from Yanis Themelis of Montreal a few weeks ago, and he had a question about this Scotch whiskey nosing kit that we featured back in December on the WhiskeyCast Holiday Gift Guide. He wanted to know whether this whiskey would be good for learning how to nose bourbons as well. It had all of the essences and flavors that you'd normally find in a Scotch whiskey, and he was curious about bourbon. It took a few weeks to get that answer back because of the holidays, but Kim Halford of Simple Essentials, who told us about the nosing kit, did get back to me. She says using that kit will help you develop your nose to the point where you should be able to pick out the common notes that Scotch does share with bourbons. Simple Essentials is developing a bourbon-specific nosing kit that will be available later on this year. And I hope that answers your question, Yanis. And if you have a question or suggestion out there on the web, my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. The emails of the week are brought to you by the Singleton of Glendolen, 12-year-old Speyside single malt Scotch whiskey aged in both American bourbon oak and European sherry oak casks. Real quickly, before I bring in the tasting panel here, I want to check the calendar of events. It's brought to you by our friends at Laphroaig. First off, for the folks here in the room with us, Jim Murray will be leading a whiskey tasting Monday night at the Kwamchian Inn in Duncan, British Columbia. And the Comox Valley Whiskey Fest is on the 27th in Courtenay, B.C. The Whiskey Meet 2011 is February 4th and 5th in Bergen, Norway. Whiskey Live Tokyo is February 19th and 20th, followed by Whiskey Live Seoul on February 27th. Dramfest 2011 is the weekend of February 25th through the 27th in Christchurch, New Zealand. And tickets are still available for the debut of the Universal Whiskey Experience on March 18th and 19th in Las Vegas. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. It is brought to you by Laphroaig. Just click the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla. Now, it's time to taste some whiskeys, folks. I've been joined by a panel of tasters from here in B.C. and around Canada. First off, my good friend Davin DeKergamo of the Malt Maniacs is with us, and I just want to take a quick check, make sure these mics are all working. Sorry, Alana. Yes, we are working here. Good. Sorry about that at home, folks. Davin DeKergamo is a longtime friend, a fellow malt maniac, and the publisher of CanadianWhiskey.org, second to my right. Noel Buckley is a member of the West Coast Whiskey Society in Vancouver. Ilana Kanigan is a member of Victoria's chapter of the Companions of the Quake. And at the end, Ross Hendry is the Canadian brand ambassador for the Glenrothes. Now, our friend Lawrence Graham, the president of the Victoria Whiskey Festival and another fellow malt maniac, has selected five different whiskeys for us to taste today here on the panel. I don't know what they are. In fact, I was looking away when he poured them. I do not know what these whiskeys are. No one up here knows what they are. And I think maybe only one person in the audience, the guy who's manning the door, knows what they are if he was in the room when they were poured. But the answers are up here in a sealed envelope. Thanks to Lawrence. And we're going to have some fun with this. This is not to trick anybody. This is not to embarrass anybody up here on the panel, especially me. But I'm kidding, of course. We're just going to have some fun, and we're going to find out, because we know that different people know whiskeys in different ways, and everybody's senses are different in what they're going to pick up. So the idea is to have some fun and show just how five different nosers can get five different things out of a whiskey. So first of all, folks, let's pick up glass number one. It is marked sample number one on your tasting sheet. And what do we get out of this, guys? And again, I don't know whether these are Scotches, Canadians, Irish. They could be anything. Lawrence might have even snuck in some mellow corn here. Lawrence has joined us in the back of the room. Lawrence, if you would come up here to the stand mic, please. And while we're nosing these, tell us just a little bit about the festival, how it got started a few years ago, and what you've accomplished with this, because this really is one of the best whiskey festivals in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
We started 6 years ago, and the main drive was to have a festival in Victoria, because I was at a festival somewhere else, and
there wasn't one in Victoria, and it really irritated me. And when things irritated me, I generally
tend to do
something.
Let me ask you to repeat that, because I'm not 100% sure your microphone was on.
So that's fine by me.
So go ahead, please repeat that, Lawrence.
We started 6 years ago, because there wasn't a festival in Victoria, and I wanted there to be a festival. And that's how we started. And I thought in the beginning we could do it quietly and nobody would notice, but I was wrong on that point. So anyway, it's gone very well.
With typical Canadian modesty, of course, Lawrence.
But, thank you.
You've got people literally from all over the world for this, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. Presenters and attendees. So it's very gratifying.
Let's everybody give Lawrence a hand, because without him, none of us would be here.
But it's also easy for us to say, you know, we do things so well, but the hotel really puts the polish on the festival. They do the heavy lifting over the weekend and changing over the rooms and everything. So, and the volunteers. So,
and
thank
in fact,
you to
I
them.
Can testify
thank you to the
to
Hotel
because,
Grand Pacific,
especially because we had a master class in here in this same room less than an hour ago, and they turned this entire room around into a room that we could do a live broadcast from with an audience after a tasting in less than an hour. So we got to really give the Hotel Grand Pacific their thanks. And if you're ever visiting Victoria, please consider the Hotel Grand Pacific. Okay, so we've all had a chance to nose this now. Noel, what do you get?
Well, considering that the last whiskey I drank was a Cask Strength Full Sherry Glenfarclas about 20 minutes ago, this is definitely a lot lighter.
Okay.
I mean, it's got a fairly lightish color. It's a little bit gold in here, but it's not super, super pale like an Ardbeg or something. It's kind of got a medium intensity to it, but it's definitely more subtle, especially compared. I mean, the flight's been arranged so that I think it's been arranged to nose correctly. Obviously, you know, the heavier whiskeys seem to get heavier as they go through. So I think this is, you know, the perfect whiskey to start with on the nose, and we'll continue and see what we get. But definitely, I think, you know, maybe a little bit of vanilla and a little bit of maybe some sweetness from a honey style on the nose on it. Yeah.
Davin's nodding. Ross is nodding. Alana, mm-hmm. What do you think?
I'm just getting a slight hint of cotton candy, just a kind of nuance there. That's just kind of a tease in there, but I agree around the lightness of it.
And if I can get you to all move the microphones just a little closer and speak into them so that we can the folks at home can hear you as well. Ross, what do you get?
Just to echo what the guys are saying, they're very light, and you know, logic would dictate that, again, to Noel's point, that we're going light to heavy. It reminded me of the Brocladic the organic Brocladic, mm-hmm. that was that I tasted just towards the end of last year around December, as well as some of the younger Cask Evolution series. You know, again, some honeyed notes in there. Obviously, there's a wee bit of smoke. Nothing that's too abrasive. But yeah, a nice starting whiskey for sure.
Davin.
Well, I wrote down sweet vanilla, clover honey. And I agree. It's light, but it's very nice. And Noel and I both had that Glenfarclas before we came here. So, but yeah, it's very, very nice whiskey. It's light. It feels good in your mouth. It fills your mouth up. There's a little wee bit of pull on your tongue, so you can tell that it's there. But it's really, it's clover honey with some vanilla around it. And, you know, a good range of very faint floral notes, I'd say.
I just tasted it, and it's got this, I get that same vanilla, the honey notes on it. It's got this nice little pepperiness that builds up and then fades down. Anybody get any nuttiness to this one? Nutty notes, almonds?
I was going to say maybe mild almond.
Okay.
I just ate a bowl of nuts with Andrew Ferguson at the bar having a pint of Guinness. So, yeah, I can taste the nuts, Mark. Yeah,
got it.
Nail on head.
Okay. Anybody have any ideas what this might be? Now that we've all tasted it.
I'm going to stick with my original gut, Brickladic Organic, because I tasted that in December, and it was really, really light, and this kind of echoes that. I don't think I'm right, but...
And there's only one right answer, and it's on the sheet there, but we if you don't get it right, we're not going to embarrass anybody, but...
10,000 choices, no. How can you get it wrong?
So we're convinced this is a Scotch then, correct? Are we convinced?
I think it's a Scotch.
Yeah.
Or a very good Irish whiskey.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the other thing too, it's a little bit tricky on it, is the alcohol integration is challenging, because it could be cask strength or it could just not be that well integrated.
Yeah.
And it's a bit tricky to say.
It did not taste cask strength to me.
No, it definitely doesn't nose cask strength, and it doesn't taste it. It tastes a little hot for what I think is like probably like not a strong whiskey. I don't know if anybody else agrees with that or not.
That's why I was thinking that Brickladic, because it's a bit younger. The cask evolution series is sharp, right? Mm-hmm.
Ilana, what do you think?
Well, I'm just thinking. I just tried putting in a bit of water.
Okay.
And it opened up a little bit with the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I don't know on the taste, but it's certainly on the.
So, Davin, you're thinking it's either a Scotch or a very good Irish.
It's a light whiskey, but I'm sure it's Scottish style whiskey.
Okay.
It's Scottish style whiskey. Yeah.
Lawrence, do you want to come up here and reveal it to us?
No.
Lawrence is rather characteristically modest. Yeah. So
like, I'll just let him sweat a little bit more.
Okay.
He's enjoying this.
Anybody want to see what this is? Okay, let's.
Oh, look at this.
Drum roll.
Yeah, this is. Okay.
Drum roll.
I need my glasses again. Aberfeldy 21-year-old at 40% ABV.
Wow.
Well,
yeah.
It's going to be like that. Is it Lawrence?
Lawrence,
you're going to go this route, are you?
Thank God for the Guinness and nachos, eh? You've got a built-in excuse now.
Number 2 through number 5 I'm putting in right now, that's Glenrothes.
Nice try, Ross. Lawrence, come up here. Come back up here for a second.
You said no tricks.
No, it wasn't a trick, but
no, there's
this
no
is
tricks.
Not a whiskey that's normally found in Canada, is it?
Well, it depends where you look, Mark.
Other than your basement, right?
Well, you know, that's where I looked. So what can I say?
Okay. But why did you pick this one?
Well, carry on and you'll see.
Okay. So let's... He's playing games with us.
No, this is
I'm not
great.
Playing games. I'm making it interesting.
He's okay.
Absolutely.
Drama adds to the whole thing here. So let's move on to number 2. And what I would say, if those of us who still have some of the number 1 left, why don't we, Lawrence, if you could come up, why don't we pass these around if you want to nose them so you guys can and the audience can get some ideas on this too? Would that be okay? Anybody?
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, we've all sipped these, but if you guys want to nose them, just to get some ideas
this
here, what we were talking about.
Failed at 21.
Yeah. It's light.
So let's go to number 2. You're grinning, Elena.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Grins don't work well on radio. So tell me what you're thinking here.
It made me think of springtime, and. Not grass, but flowers, and in the spring, and
it's got some herbal notes to it. I get some a little bit of maybe some lavender.
Yes,
a little bit of lavender, some rose petals.
You know, running through the fields.
Yeah, rose petals, floral. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, very floral. Some maybe some dried straw in there.
It's a little. It's creamier than the Aberfeldy.
The mouthfeel is totally it's different. It's also about oils too, as well.
Davin, I need you to speak up just a little bit and get closer to the microphone.
From the nose, it's creamier than the Aberfeldy was. It's a little bit bigger and, as I said, floral.
And Ross has resorted to the brand ambassador trick of splashing some on his wrist.
Yeah, the old Ronnie Cox trick.
Of course.
That wee trick actually gives me a lot of kind of light wood, like a light fresh oak, and
almost like a green wood.
Not quite green, not where it's not mature, but some nice fudgy notes as well, like not a strict kind of sharp sweetness, but that
maybe
creamy, like Devin was saying, like creamy fudgy vanilla fudge, that kind of thing. Maybe not heavy on the vanilla, but you know, some nice notes in there.
I get, and feel free to slap me down on this if you like, I actually get a little bit of peanut butter in this. Mm-hmm.
That'd be smooth or creamy?
Chunky.
But I get a little bit of a nuttiness, a little bit of almost peanut butter type notes.
I'm going to agree with Ross here, too. I think especially on the back of the palate, there's like an almost oak drying sensation on this. It's definitely you can feel it on the backside. It's not like a tannic style, like but it's definitely, there's almost a bit of an oak drying.
There's some brown sugar in there, too.
Yep.
A little bit of...
On the palate, I get ginger and
I haven't tasted it yet.
It's really quite almost effervescent on the palate.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah,
effervescence. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely spot on.
Ilana, you just tasted it. What were your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I'm nodding in agreement here with the fellows on the panel here that it there's a slight bit of pepper as well on the tongue. It dances on your tongue.
Dance is a good word.
That's a good descriptor. Completely different than the Aberfeldy.
Yeah. Definitely a lot more body.
A lot more.
Yeah.
Really, and I get
high alcohol content.
I see what
content.
You're saying about the dancing. This is probably closer to cask strength, I would bet.
Yeah. There's definitely.
But yeah, I can see the dancing on the tongue. That's a really good descriptor. Because any thoughts what this might be? We know what Ross is going to say. He's going to say it's the Glenrothes.
It's Glenrothes, yeah.
This doesn't have that creaminess that the Glenrothes expresses.
No, well, that's kind of what I'm keeping my antenna up about. Like, it's that creamy palate that we consistently have. But this is getting kind of almost like a watery, dry, astringent, like that wood thing's coming through and whatnot. Which again, but you know yourself, Mark. We do vintages, so one changes from the next, and I could be really making a fool of myself.
But. Let's pick a victim from the audience and come up to the floor microphone. And my friends from Seattle, come on up. I met these guys from Seattle earlier. Both of you, come on up and introduce yourselves.
My name is Jeremy.
And Suzanne Foster.
And you guys flew in from Seattle for this, and you had to wait several years to get tickets for this, didn't you?
Yeah, this was our third or fourth year trying.
And you finally made it, so welcome to Victoria. We're glad to have you here. Can somebody please pass them this and so they can nose it? And let's see what you guys think of this one as well. And you were telling me earlier that you guys are fairly inexperienced and fairly novice whiskey connoisseurs, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
How did you develop your desire to really learn more about whiskey?
Well, I think the more whiskey you drink, the more you enjoy drinking it.
Of course. What do you think of that?
I definitely think it tastes, smells a little bit sweet and maybe a little bit grassy for me.
Yeah, I think I get the grass, but not necessarily, like you're saying, not necessarily young. It does kind of smell light yet mature.
Okay. Any thoughts on what this might be yet from the panel?
I would hesitate that it's along something like almost like a Glenlivet style, but it doesn't have an alcohol profile that matches anything I know from there.
Okay.
But it definitely has that kind of...
And thank you both for joining us.
That almost like meadow kind of freshness to it. I get a little bit of bourbon in the back of it too, like a little bit of
maybe a bourbon cask.
Yeah, well background. Spotted. No,
what's that? Sorry,
well spotted. There's bourbon.
Yeah, and so definitely the kind of toasty vanilla style from that.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of racking my brain, I'm sure it's going to be obvious when we see the answer, or not maybe unlike the last one.
Davin.
So,
well, I'd have to guess it's a cask strength Aberfeldy 21-year-old.
Okay.
Where did that come from? I'm not sure this is such spicy whiskey. Mm-hmm. It has to have been, I think, in a some kind of a European oak cask at some point during its maturation.
Okay. But, go ahead.
Knowing Lawrence, it's not what we expect it will be.
This could be fun. Okay, you ready to see what it is?
Sure, why not?
Okay, let's open up the envelope here. glasses back out.
Glen
Caddam, 21-year-old at 46%. So it wasn't a cask strength.
No,
but it was up there in ABV.
It's definitely ABV higher. Not a full cask strength like we were thinking. So Lawrence, Glen Caddam, 21, huh? Come on up, Lawrence. You're not getting out that easily. Lawrence,
Mr. Clever there.
We nailed the 21 part.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll see. Carry on.
Why'd you pick this one?
Well, it's unusual to see it here, mm-hmm. and so I thought it would be something fairly new, especially in this marketplace. So.
Okay. Again, we can pass these around for anybody who would like to, if you'd like to nose these, come on up.
Take
and
a wild guess right off
we can pass, here. If somebody can come up, we can nose these and pass them around while the panel moves on to number three.
Who knows?
We'll Any see. Thoughts so far? Are you guys having fun with this?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah it's awesome.
Noah and I are trying to work out a pattern.
Yeah, this is my guess for number five right now, just off the top of my head.
And for those of you listening, if you've jumped in the middle of this, you are listening to WhiskeyCast live from the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia. If you came in late, we will have the entire show up as a podcast on the WhiskeyCast website and the iTunes feed later on tonight. And if you have comments or feedback that you'd like to share, please email me at comments@whiskeycast.com. If we get a good response to this, we may do things like this more often in the future now that we've actually figured out that we can do these things live. So this is, as I said before, the first time we've tried to do one of these live. So if you like it, we'll try to do this again. So we have number three now. What are we thinking, guys?
Well, I think the first thing to notice is the color profile is a little different on this whiskey. Mm-hmm.
This is darker and redder.
It's darker and redder. So right away it's going to, I think, suggest a couple things, right? One is either potentially sherry cask aging, Oloroso, perhaps, or longer maturation. But that's just a guess at this point.
Well, we've had two 21-year-olds. So
makes sense.
So if we're going much older, then...
I'm not saying much older. I'm just saying it's...
But again, maturity is not a measure of age.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And knowing Mr. Graham.
Color is not a measure of maturity.
Exactly. And knowing Mr. Graham, he might like actually bump us down to like a 12-year-old cash strength here or something like that just to get in amongst us. But definitely Oloroso sherry in there, the sharpness, dried fruit.
Yeah, some orange peel
spiciness. Yeah, definitely some citrus zest in there.
Yeah.
I'd just like to add to that as well. We were just a few hours ago drinking Cavalan Soloist Sherry Cask. This is a Taiwanese whiskey, and it's like 3.5 years old, and it is the deepest red you can possibly imagine, and it's fantastic.
So color is not an indication of anything other than color.
Color, yeah, but it can lead some hints.
Yeah.
Is anybody getting a hint of chocolate? Just like the aftertaste from when you've had hot chocolate and you have the aftertaste, that dry.
Just a bit of dark chocolate,
chocolate.
A little bit of cocoa.
Just a slight little cocoa.
Okay, and to the folks in the audience, the next round of master classes is going to start soon. If you have to leave, go ahead. But we've enjoyed having you, and feel free to stay as long as you want, because we're going to go for a little bit longer here until we finish all five of these. But everybody's tasted this now, right?
Yeah, I get, I think there's definitely a little bit of tannic background on it as well at the finish.
Finish is pretty short. Maybe not short, that's the right word, but it doesn't evolve on you.
Mm-hmm.
It finishes flat.
Okay, let's
almost
pick
like
another victim from the audience.
Yeah,
ma'am,
like
you
that.
Here on the end.
Andrew Dowell.
Your turn.
Yeah.
Please come up here, take this, go up to the microphone and introduce yourself, and then tell us what you think of it.
Andrew Dowell, yeah, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And what's your name?
My name's Sandra Odendahl from Qualicum Beach.
Okay.
The island.
And what do you think of this one?
Well, I think it's not nearly as floral. It has more caramel taste to me. It's got a stronger taste. I think it
smell.
Smell, I mean, from the smell, it seems to be a higher alcohol content, I would think, as well.
Okay. Very good. What do we think this is, guys?
Well,
any guesses?
It's from sherry wood.
I don't know this distillery particularly well, but I just threw out this random guess of Edredour. I mean, I don't know if that's right or not, but just the something on the finish seems to tell me that it's, from the ones I've tasted, has this same kind of
soapiness.
Soapiness, yeah. And I don't mean that as a detriment, but it's just it seems to stand out a bit on the finish. I totally agree with Ross on that. Yeah.
Ross, what do you think?
I'm going with my man here, Ed Redover.
David?
Well, it's a Speyside of some kind, but honestly, I can't nail it.
Speyside, you're predicting?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the first person that has identified a region.
Come on up to the microphone and make your point. We can't hear you if you're sitting in the audience.
Oh, it's a traditional Speyside.
Yeah,
it's
very I was a little disappointed that none of the panel before this identified the region that the whiskies came from. Because obviously there's a characteristic to the region, and that gives you a clue as to what it might be.
Good point.
So yeah. I would have liked, now we know, or we think we know, it's from Speyside, so we're zeroing in on...
But you have to remember that sometimes distillers fool us. Yes. I mean, we can have a...
Now that's Graham. That's not the.
That's because they can give us a classically Speyside whiskey, but then they throw peat into the mix and throw us off.
Well, absolutely.
Or they can go down to Islay and you get whiskeys that don't have a lot of peat in them that confuse us too.
Like Gunahaven, tastes like a Speyside.
Yeah.
Or Kalila unpeated. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, we have sample number three here. Ready to see what it is?
Sure.
Davin. High props, Balvenie 21-year-old at 40% ABV. Well done, Davin.
21-year-old? Well, you should have guessed the 21.
The Portwood.
So it wasn't a sherry cask, but it was a Speyside.
Yeah, great.
Well done.
Nice work.
So we can pass this around, too. We have a few people left in the room, if you guys want to nose this. And let's move on to sample number four, guys. I'm noticing different styles here. Alana takes her hand, cups it over the wine glass, and inhales deeply through the hand. Ross is doing the wrist trick, and Davin and Noel are just sticking the nose in as far as they can get it into the glass.
I think I'm doing the Jim Murray approved, standard issue cap the glass cup it technique.
If you've never seen a Jim Murray tasting, Jim will take the glass with the stem, warm it in his hand, hold the hand over the top, and try to get that heat into the glass. And if what I would love to see sometime is Jim and Richard Patterson together at a tasting, because if Jim does that in front of Richard, Richard will smack him because Richard does the exact opposite and holds it by the stem and swirls it. And it just goes to show that everybody has their own different style here. So what do we get out of this one?
Cream soda.
I'm just getting my first sniff of it. Cream soda. And since you have walked up to bring the other glass up, I think you should take a glass of this after everybody's had a chance and step to the microphone.
Oh,
here, come here and take this glass. No. You don't get to run out of the room.
You just agreed.
There's something
to
very
she wants to get
this.
a sip of water. That's
there's
fine.
Something really
go up to the microphone and.
Does anybody feel that? Like this?
What?
There's something really familiar about this on the nose.
I'm going to guess Mortlock, 21-year-old.
Okay. What's your name?
My name's Barb Wuhr. I'm from Victoria.
Okay. Is this your first time at the festival?
My second. I was here 2 years ago, but I'm a newcomer to whiskey tasting.
Okay. So what do you smell? What do you get when you nose this?
Oh, gosh. It reminds me of swimming at the crystal pool when I was a kid, sort of a chlorine. Hmm. It's a terrible description. But
it's a good descriptor. I mean, if it reminds me, because remember that smells and what we nose are nothing more than memories that our brain makes as we've smelled things in the past. So if it reminds you of a pool when you were a kid, that's a great memory.
Yeah, it's not the chlorine, but it's something about the pool, the...
maybe the suntan lotion or something like that, or
something biscuity about this at the very back when you get your nose right into it. There's something very like digestive biscuit, tea biscuit about this as well.
Yeah.
So what do you get when you taste this? Since she has my glass,
again some sherry cask. There's a meatiness that leads me to think it might be from Mortlock.
Yes.
There's a little, just a little bit of kind of earthy, maybe earthy peaty peat smoke. Not much, though.
Okay.
That's what's throwing me off here, Dan.
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me a lot in color and nose of the third 79 single cast from Glenrothes. It does a lot, but there's a wee bit of smoke in there that I don't that I don't taste in that whiskey when I taste it.
I just had one of those the 79 single casks.
Yeah, I was tasting one earlier on at like 11:30 this morning.
But a couple of weeks ago I had a sample of it at home that I was tasting, and I see your point on that.
There's something in there that makes it not the 79 for
me. Oh yeah, but there's a touch of something there. Almost, and you're going to laugh, I get a little bit of maple in there, a little bit of maple syrup.
Yeah,
I get a bit of gingerbread or something like that, which is similar to maple
syrup. Both good descriptions. Yeah. Both, like, I can see exactly where you are with them.
Yeah. I get some nutmeg,
Christmas
again,
cake.
That baking.
Christmas cake.
Christmas cake, brandy pudding, like traditional mince pies.
I got to take one more taste of this.
I've had it before, but I can't say what it is.
I feel the same way. It's like
totally 100% know what you mean.
Does anybody else get a note of banana?
It's mysterified fruits in there.
I get
some
banana.
Definitely fruits.
Mysterified fruits. Yeah, like pear drop, banana, like tropical fruit. Like
I get the pear now.
Hard boiled sweet, like sweetie shop, like walking in that rich sugar and whatnot in the air.
Well, let me pass this one around. If you can come up and grab this and pass it around so everybody can get a good whiff of it.
What do we think from region? It's hard, but
I'm thinking it's a Highland.
Yep.
I'm thinking it's a Highland.
Medium-bodied, yeah.
But Highland is easy because that's a cheap guess.
Yep.
It's not it's not a Springbank. It doesn't have that saltiness that you get from Campbelltowns. And it's not a Lowlander. So, and I think Lawrence has crossed us up. With our luck, it's probably going to be a Canadian. Lawrence has not really crossed us up yet. But while everybody's passing this around.
That tea biscuit, digestive biscuit.
Yeah.
It just doesn't go anywhere. It just keeps coming.
Are we ready to see what it is?
Sure.
Why not?
Everybody ready? Lawrence, get up here.
Lawrence is special batting.
No.
I'm sure getting my exercise
today. It's another
21-year-old.
Oh, we got the 21 already.
Nika 21 from Japan.
Wow.
3%.
Nice choice, Mr.
It's a nice whiskey, isn't it?
It's very tasty.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I was lucky enough, there's a bar down in Brooklyn that I would recommend to anyone called Char 4.
Yeah, Char 4.
And they've got a couple of single cast vintage Nikas.
How'd they pull that off? There's no Nika in the US officially. They must have snuck those in.
Well, this is the thing. Like, I also noticed a couple of Berry Brothers owned selections from like the 1970s type thing that down there, so it was actually part of a private collection.
Liquor Control Board is listening. We did not just say that because they have to stick to the official New York State list. Pretend you didn't hear us.
I'm a liar. a couple of great vintage years on Nika down there. I think it was 84 and 87 they had. Fantastic stuff.
So are we surprised?
Yeah.
I think maybe
not now.
Yeah, not now. I think, but I mean, a fair statement would be to say it's a great whiskey, and I think like a lot of Japanese whiskeys that have been in the media, and you know, there's basically a massive appreciation for these whiskeys that's come out in the last 5 years or so, that they are paralleling, you know, the best whiskeys of Scotland. And I think things like you mentioned, the Malt Maniacs earlier, we have three people from the organization in the room here, and how many Japanese whiskeys have won? I mean, there is Yamazaki 1984 in 2006, and there's been some whiskeys from Japan that have scored extremely highly, if not at the top of that event. So I don't think anybody, I mean, I think we're surprised that we all figured it was Spey region or Highland region at least, but not surprised by the quality.
So something like the Hibiki and the Yamazaki that use the plum brandy casks and stuff like that in their mix, like I don't get much of that in there. It's almost like a mirroring, like you said, of something from Scotland and mirrored the techniques pretty closely. I don't think there's anything that says that it's uniquely Japanese.
Like a Yamazaki
Japanese.
Yeah. So what's the best one of the lot so far? What's your favorite one?
I might go with sample 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sample 4 too.
Yeah. Devin?
I very much like sample 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed my friend Andy Craig's Balvenie 21. I'll give him a wee shout out though.
Okay.
He's my friend.
That's fair.
Mm. Yeah, they're all good.
Andy, we are sorry.
They're all good. They're all good. Lawrence did an excellent job of chewing this. Let's go to sample number five, the final one. That would be too consistent, Lawrence. Okay, let's draft another volunteer. You sitting in the second row on the aisle, come up and join us at the microphone.
Ooh.
And I'm not sure. Tell us your name.
On the palette now.
My name's Crystal from Edgemont, North Vancouver.
Okay. And how much experience do you have now?
That's great.
A couple years. I'm managing a private store right now, but I'm still pretty new to whiskey.
Okay.
Hadn't tried a single one before starting there. So.
We met at Hopscotch, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so what do you get out of this? Well, go ahead and nose it while everybody else gives their impressions here on the panel first. Go ahead, guys. Davin?
Well, peat smoke, there's some spiciness in there. Nice sweetness. It feels good. It feels a little earthy or muddy in your mouth. It's
A little bit of garden soil, maybe?
Clean garden soil.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, like potting soil. Like.
Yeah, it tastes like an Islay whiskey, but it's probably
bacon.
Lawrence probably found this in Taiwan or something like that.
Lawrence is sitting in the front row with a big grin on his face right now. Ilana?
There's a component that doesn't match the aroma in the mouth, you know, and it's a harshness there that I can't quite label, but it's there.
Thank you.
I'm looking for some language around that.
And what did you
think
get?
The alcohol is?
I got a touch of the smokiness,
the
but not like a whole lot. It's definitely
It's very subtle smoke. It's
and a touch of sweetness in there.
Okay, Ross.
Well, I think there's a lot of bacon and smoked sausage and that kind of those kind of meatiness notes that Dan was talking about.
Are we
a wonderful whiskey? My favorite number five. Sorry, Andy Weir, but what do you call it? My favorite by far so far.
You guys have tasted this. I have not yet. What do you get on the taste? The same things?
That's what I'm saying. Like that sausage and kind of. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like I was in New Harmony a couple of years ago. And New Harmony, Indiana, this tiny little town
right.
in the Midwest of the U.S. And they served a local delicacy, which was maple sugared bacon. And it was.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't eat 15 slices of the stuff, but
I grew up in Indiana, and yes, maple sugar and maple syrup bacon is
tremendous, and that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah,
you know, like that smokiness, but still like sweet, salty.
But it's
like,
got a tanginess to it too.
Yeah,
brininess.
Yep, absolutely.
Are we convinced that this is an Islay?
No, I think it's an Ardmore.
Ardmore, interesting choice, a peated space
and a 21-year-old, I'll bet.
my first guess on this.
Because I know that Ardmore does not have a 21-year-old. They have the traditional, which is a no-age statement, and a 30-year-old.
They did have. Or
maybe
it's
an independent
a Glengarry then. Maybe it's one of the old Glengarrys.
The note I first wrote down here, and this could be, I'm less sure of myself, but when I first noticed this, given the trend, was Benriach 21 Authenticus. Just because it's a light repeated than, say, like the heavy-duty Islay whiskeys.
And Lawrence has been sticking to a 21-year-old theme.
To a 21-year-old theme, and you know, while the Japanese whiskey threw me off, but they'd all been Speyside, you know, or Highland whiskeys. So, but we'll see. I mean, it could be a Bowmore too. It's the peat, but I don't think so. I don't think it has. Right. I don't think it's a coastal element.
It has just a little touch of brininess. What I'm thinking is, if it's an Islay, it's more like Boonehaven maybe from the other coast,
peated
of Islay, where they don't get as much of the wind. And as much of the salt.
It has the peat smoking, but it doesn't have the maritime qualities that a lot of these whiskeys do.
Well, are we ready to figure out what this one is?
I think it's Bowmore.
Money on it being an Indian whiskey.
That's probably not a bad call.
Please. You can't hear you if you're not at the microphone.
I'm just going by Lawrence.
No, we can't hear you if you're not at the microphone. What's your guess?
I found that the nosing was very coarse.
Okay.
And that reminds me of an Indian whiskey.
And what is your name again?
Willie Odendahl from Qualicum Beach.
Okay.
And tested one at our whiskey tasting, and it's gosh awful.
Okay.
No.
Let's. We're ready to figure out what this one is.
Yeah.
Our final whiskey, sample number 5. Lagavulin, 21-year-old at 55.6%.
This is embarrassing. Wow. Just wanted to say.
We just had this in Noel's room. No, I'm kidding.
We did, but I know who bought Lawrence. I know who where Lawrence got his bottle from.
Lawrence, that's a fantastic lineup. But,
yeah, okay. So we started pinning things down to Islay, but Lagavulin is not as heavily peated.
Yeah.
And it still had some of that brininess. Was it, Lawrence, tell us about this bottle. Please come up to the microphone.
It's bottle shaped.
No, thank you.
What can I say about Lagavulin 21?
Official distillery bottle.
Yes, official distillery bottle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to think.
Can I add some comments here?
Yeah, sure. Guys. Yeah, go ahead. Anybody have any questions for Lawrence?
I'm guessing that this is a bottle I provided for you about 3 years ago, 2-3 years ago.
Well, I'm not sure. I had a few, so you got me one of them. So.
And I'll go on a limb here and say this was one of my favorite whiskeys of all time, and I'm not convinced right now that I remember it the same way that I had it before. The last time we tasted this, our club tasted just under 2 years ago, and it was awesome, but it doesn't seem to have the layers and depth that it had the first time I had it. So either I'm totally off base, but I should know this whiskey well because I've got a bunch of it at home and I really like it. Mm-hmm. But it definitely threw me for a loop. Like, it didn't seem to have the maritime qualities that I usually get at a Lagavulin. Like, Lagavulin to me is the smoky, peaty whiskey. Maybe that is right. It has a bit of a drying astringency as opposed to like Lefroy or Ardbeg, which have different characteristics, you know, iodine, maritime, or tar based as well, right? So it's great whiskey. Still great whiskey, yeah.
It really sweetens up when you add a little bit of water.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ilana?
I have a question, my fellow panel members, because I noticed that you haven't been adding water, and I was wondering if you wanted to say something about that, because I usually do both. So
I'm a big proponent of you drink your whiskey whatever way you want to drink your whiskey, and I think that, you know, nobody, regardless of expertise or experience in this category or industry, has the right to tell anyone how they drink their whiskey. For example, Ronnie Cox always tells me to add a bit of water. The great John Ramsay adds an awful lot of water to his whiskey, particular cask strengths. I just prefer not to. Mm-hmm. You know,
I know when I do my tasting notes, I start off without water, and then I will add water in at the end to get both notes and to get it as it came out of the bottle, and then also to see what difference water makes.
If I was writing tasting notes, like in a very formal setting and whatnot, then I think you have to add water. And I don't think there's anything wrong with adding a couple of bits of ice either. But depending on the whiskey, depending on the situation, everything, I just kind of like straight up neat.
Devin?
Well, if you drink a little sip of water after you've assessed the whiskey as it comes from the bottle, you've had a few sips, if you drink a little bit of water right away, you get essentially the same effect. Mm. The water comes in, a little bit of water washes over your tongue, and it does release all kinds of new flavors. And that with this Lagavulin 21-year-old, you know, I took a little sip of water, and wow, it just got really sweet in my mouth right away. So then I added water to the glass and tasted it. So I think water helps. I do think you can taste more with water. And I had a distiller once tell me, you know, you can spend an hour with a whiskey and from the bottle and you can get everything, or you can add some water and get it right away.
Lawrence, any final thoughts? Now that you've surprised us with 5 21-year-olds of...
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm glad you... I hope you enjoyed them. Yes.
We did.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Unusual in this part of the world. So there we go. So I'm glad.
Were you surprised that we didn't nail any of them right off?
No, it's such a tough task. There's so many whiskeys out there. How could you possibly guess what it is? It's very difficult.
Well, thank you again, Lawrence, for putting this little challenge together for us. And I want to
thank you,
my panelists, Ross, Noel, Davin, and Ilana. Can I have a little bit of applause from the people left in the room?
Thank you for sticking through the next class as well.
And if you missed any part of this live webcast, it'll be available later on the WhiskeyCast website. And be sure to listen for a second bonus episode this weekend with more highlights and news from the Victoria Whiskey Festival. Some folks I really need to thank in addition to my panel. I want to thank Gary Kine and Luke Davison here at the Hotel Grand Pacific. They put together all the technical equipment and everything we needed to put together all the sound and make this actually work, along with the entire staff of the Hotel Grand Pacific, who, as we said earlier, turned this room around in less than an hour from a master class room to essentially making it ready for a live broadcast. Along with Carolyn Yardley and her team at Star Global, they managed the Victoria Whiskey Festival website that hosted our live webcast. Of course, Lawrence Graham, Ian Huey, a cast of thousands of volunteers, literally, that make the Victoria Whiskey Festival one of the world's best whiskey festivals. And again, I want to thank everybody in the room here. Give yourselves a quick hand, please. Thank you again. You will find links for the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed at the WhiskeyCast website, along with the calendar of events, my tasting notes, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And again, my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. I hope you enjoyed this first ever live webcast of WhiskeyCast. If you have comments, please send them to me, because it'll help us decide whether we want to do this again here in Victoria next year or somewhere else down the road. And if you're ever at a whiskey festival and you see me there, please feel free to stop by and say hello. I'd love to meet you. Once again, WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011. This special edition comes to you live from the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly, and thanks for listening.